Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
The Life She Forgot by Joanna Davidson Politano. He promised to help her reclaim the memories she lost, no matter what they found, until she remembered another man. Cornwall, 1913. For 3 years, Marin has lived without a past. No family, no history, no home that's truly hers. When the threat of being locked away for her own protection looms, she takes a desperate chance on A.J. Winthrop, a warm-hearted, whimsical stranger who offers a hasty marriage of convenience and a promise. He will take her back to Cornwall and help her uncover the truth about who she once was. But along the wild Cornish coast, the memories that begin to surface are not the ones she expects. Another man, another wedding, a life that may already be hers. When a hidden painting reveals Marin's own face staring back from another life, the fragile life she's begun to build with AJ begins to unravel, because the truth waiting in her past could destroy the love she's only just found. Cornwall, 1947. Haunted by the war and estranged from the wife he still loves, William Crawford is determined to save their family home for her, even if it means selling the mysterious portrait of Marin Dunn tucked away in his cottage. But the secrets hidden within the painting threaten to overturn everything he believes, or lead him toward a redemption he never expected. Decades apart, two lives are bound by a single portrait and the truth it refuses to keep hidden. This sweeping dual-timeline historical mystery weaves together lost memories, buried truths, and a love story that refuses to fade.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, I'm chatting with Joanna Davidson Politano, who writes atmospheric historical fiction that blends romance, mystery, and emotional depth, often set in distinctive old estates. I think we're going to be friends already, Joanna, because I love old estates. So welcome to my show.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So why, I mean, I know this wasn't one of the questions that you chose, but I have to ask, why old estates? What draws you to those? Because I have a feeling you have more than one book kind of set in that kind of place.
Oh, yeah. You know, honestly, I was writing a lot of other genres before I got published. And then my husband and I went to Scotland on our honeymoon years ago. And all we did was run around and visit all these estates. And there are so many stories. It was so amazing. And it just, like, it made something come alive in me. And all of these stories that have just been kind of forgotten, you know, we did the tours of all these houses and heard the stories, but then a lot of times we'd wander across the street or go to the local pub and say, hey, what's the actual story behind this house? Like, who lived here? Mm-hmm. And these people would tell me, you know, we've grown up here for generations, my family, and here's a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Here's the actual family dynamic. And the stories were so rich and so interesting. And there's just something unique about a house that has lasted and, you know, longer than so many generations. It has seen so many stories. And I don't know, that in itself makes these houses just worth something and just so unique.
So that leads me to one of the questions you actually did pick, the location and setting. So are you all your novel? I know you write the historical kind of romantic suspense sub genre, but are they all set like in England and Scotland, or do you have a particular setting that you go back to, area that you go back to, or are they all over the world?
Oh, actually, they're all in England.
Okay.
This latest one is in Cornwall, which is part of England. I got a lot of my story ideas by traveling around Scotland years ago, but all of the stories are set in England, some in the theater in London, some out in the rural areas and things like that, but almost always set in kind of an old estate.
All right. So there's just not old enough estates in America. This is what you're telling me.
Exactly. Yep. We got to go back further.
I can get that. I can understand that. So, you know, historical romantic suspense is an interesting, I think, an interesting kind of twist on the romantic suspense. So what drew you to start throwing the suspense and romance together in a historical setting?
I think I just love to be surprised so much. I started writing a book that was kind of a romance novel, but not enough romance in it to really qualify. And then I took this class by James Patterson, and he's, of course, a suspense writer, a thriller writer. And some of the techniques he gave just really excited me, and they sounded so fun. And I just, because I love to be surprised at the end of a book, it gets me so excited to write something that surprises other people. And a lot of times, frankly, it surprises me too, which makes it more fun to write, so.
Yeah, so you don't know all the details when you start writing?
Oh, I absolutely know all the details, but I'm always
Okay.
wrong.
Always. I love that. I love that. Yeah, I'm often surprised. I'm more of a panster. I don't do a lot of plotting. I mean, I kind of have ideas in my head, where is it going to go? But I don't always, sometimes the villain changes. Sometimes like, oh, it's not that. Oh, that's why I did that. Oh, okay. And things going. So I find it fascinating how our, everyone's brain puts things together.
It takes a lot of skill to be that flexible too, and be open to big changes like who the villain is. That's pretty cool that you can do that.
Yeah, I guess you could call it cool. Some of my friends say they're more plotters, which I think is wonderful. If I, I might write faster if I could do that. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I don't
I
want to spoil.
tried.
Like I like you, yeah. Like you, I like to have the kind of enjoyment of writing it. And if I plot it out too much, I'm like, well, what's the fun in that? For my brain, at
I
least.
know. Yeah, it's kind of like when you read, you like to be pulled through the story by the unknowns.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So now we've covered why romantic suspense is just the best genre ever. So how about when you find time to write? How does that fit into I mean, you mentioned you have kids, you're married. So how do you fit writing into your life?
This has been a tricky one. I wrote a lot when I was a single adult and when I, was married with no kids and didn't get published, and that would have been very convenient to get published then. But I actually wrote my debut published novel when I had my first baby, and she was napping so much as a newborn, and I didn't know what to do with myself all day, because I was working. So I became a nap time novelist, and I had two kids, and I just kept writing during their nap times. It worked really well. Then we started homeschooling, and they got some independent work time, and I wrote during that. Homeschool stretching a lot longer. Now I have three kids, and they're getting older. So really, it comes down to getting up early in the morning when my brain is fresh and just like super creative. And then trying to do a little bit in the evening when they're in bed, but my brain's a little fried usually. So the interesting thing that I've found, honestly, is that when you put your priorities in the right way, somehow the time comes. It comes. And my priorities are always real people over imaginary people. So if somebody needs me, if somebody drops by my house, which actually happens quite a bit, we live out in a very rural area that, is peaceful and people come out here a lot. I prioritize the real people over my writing, and somehow the writing also somehow happens.
Yeah, no, I love that. I mean, obviously you're serious about your writing, which is, I think, an important part of it. But yes, I often thought when my children were younger and some days that I thought I was going to have time to write, I didn't because somebody needed me more, right? And
Sure. Oh, yeah.
in those days, I sort of remind myself, this is the day that God gave me, and I'm going to rejoice in it, and I'm going to not worry about all my to-do list or the writing I didn't get done. And that can just be, I think, a challenge for us,
But
especially when we want to do more writing, to balance that out.
that's a beautiful way to look at it, though. I really love that take on it.
It took me a long time to get there, but thank you. A lot of tears and frustration, and then I just was like, what am I doing? Why am I fighting against
Yeah.
what the day that the Lord has given me? Why? because he's
That's
he
so
knows
beautiful.
everything that we're going to do, you know, and it just was so helpful. It really helped me and my heart just to be in a better place. I won't say that it helped me to get more writing done, you know, but it helped me, you know, I mean, just being honest, you know, right? It just helped me to go, this is what God has for me. And that's just helpful when we go through different seasons of life where we have more time and less time, and we do have to get more creative, you know, in writing. You know, I've had to learn, my brain has always been fresher in the morning, but I've had to learn to write, you know, right after dinner, which is not my favorite time to do it, but if I want to get it done, that's the time I have. So,
Oh,
not that I
that's
write
hard to be
late into the
creative after
evening,
dinner.
but yeah, it's what I got. So, you know, it's either that or no words get done. So,
Yeah, I
got to
hear
choose,
you.
right?
Yeah, and
Yeah.
releasing those expectations are just, they're part of parenthood. They're part of life with God. They're just essential, right?
Yes, they are. And reminding that we all on different writing journeys, and some of us will churn out multiple books a year, and some of us will maybe get one out or not, or none, depending on the year. Because, like you, and I did love what you said about prioritizing people, real people, over imaginary people. And I think that's beautiful as well, because I think it speaks to, you know, what is important in life. Yes, our words are important, our books are important, but when that neighbor drops by or your kid needs you for something, you know, you have to think about, you know, what your other callings are and what needs to be your hat on your head at that moment. The author
Yes,
or the right
absolutely.
or the mom or the neighbor or the whoever. So I think that's always tricky to do. Let's talk about readers. Because I love readers. We all love readers. What's your favorite way to connect with readers?
You
Or
know,
change the
honestly, I
subject
love
entirely.
one-on-one connection.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah.
Along with having people drop by my house, I just love one-on-one connections with readers. A lot of times I have a reader email me a question. A lot of times readers respond to my newsletter and we start a conversation and we just go back and forth, and I love those. Those are beautiful. I also have a prayer promise on my website that, you know, I will promise to pray for you if you want to just shoot me your prayer request. I've actually developed some really strong friendships from that. There's even a reader who comes over to my house and plays with my kids and hangs out with us and stuff like that. But people write to me because I'm a stranger. They can write to me about private things, embarrassing things, you know, things they don't necessarily want to tell their local friends. But they can get it off their chest, and I can just be a sounding board, and that's very precious to me. I love it. As far as connecting with readers globally, I think my newsletter is my favorite just because it's like talking to somebody over coffee. It's more personal than shouting into social media and things like that.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, I know,
definitely
and
the personal connection.
yes. Yeah, and I love that what you said about, you know, offering just to pray for people. I think sometimes we have these platforms of storytelling, and when we can use them for, you know, for beyond, you know, reaching them through our book, I think that can just be so special. Not every author is called to do that, but I think those of us who
Oh,
are, I
sure.
think that's really, you know, that's just a really precious thing. I have a for my readers, my subscribers, I offer a encouragement card where I'll literally mail them a card. It has a scripture on it, and every year I pray about the little short message on the back. It's like a little, it's just a postcard kind of thing. And I've always just been so humbled and blessed when they email me to say, this is exactly what I needed to hear. You know, and just how
Wow.
God just using it to encourage them. Yeah, I just got one actually in the mail yesterday because I have my return address on it. Sometimes they'll mail me something back. Sometimes they just email me. But, you know, she just was like, yeah, God's been, you know, I've been wrestling with this. This has been really hard for me. And then your card came, and it was like God saying, hey, you really do need this, you know, or whatever, the answer to their prayer. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I hear that, like you were saying about your prayers and stuff. You know, you just hear that and you're just like, wow. You know, sometimes he gives us these ideas, you know, your prayer thing online and my little encouragement cards, and you're just like, can just be, I don't know why we're surprised, Joanna. Why are we surprised? I mean,
it
you know,
is
so I ask
very
myself
spirit
this sometimes.
Directed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
I mean,
anyway.
Yeah, I think we, as writers, we do so much talking. And, you know, we have so much that we want to say and convey through our stories and convey through, you know, blog posts and things like that. But, like, just listening or just, you know, like you're doing, just reaching out to people without any kind of agenda. I love that. And it does sound so spirit-directed what you're doing.
Yeah, and it just was an idea during COVID I had, and I have like more than 1,000 people on the list. And every year they sign up, I send them one right away, and then every year they get one, you know, and it costs me money, you know, I'm not going to lie.
Uh-huh.
But somehow
I'm sure.
I get the, you know, from my, you know, but it's just, it just feels so worth it when you get those back and you realize that, you know, God is using it in a way that I, you know, I just want to encourage people, but he's using it in a way that is, you know, just some, just a beautiful thing. And it's just so, I just love that. Because
that's,
it just shows
that's us, really cool.
You know, how God is. And I'm sure you get the same kind of reaction for your little, you know, people who tell you these things and share these things. And you don't, we don't always get to hear, but every once in a while we do. And I think that's just a wonderful thing. And they may never buy my book. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, they're
investing
on my, they're
in
on my
people
newsletter.
Is always.
Yes.
Yeah, investing in people is always worth it.
It is. It is worth it. You just have to feel like that's just, you know, by helping someone else in their faith, and that is huge. That is huge. So,
yeah.
Well, it
mm-hmm.
has been a delight to talk to you, but we are out of time, so unfortunately, we're going to have to stop talking. So, but I do want to leave you
chatting.
With one. It's been fun chatting. Is there anything, if no one has read any of your books, what is one thing you would like them to know about maybe your writing style or the type of book that you read that you would like to end our show with today?
I would say my books are very atmospheric. They're also very spirit-driven, and sometimes that shows up more overt or less overt, but they're always, always written with God. And so everything that I write revolves around that, and a lot of it revolves around just the value of people, especially those who are kind of undervalued and overlooked.
Mm. Now that is lovely. So thank you so much for sharing about your writing, about a bunch of things on my show today. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Now an excerpt from The Life She Forgot by Joanna Davidson Politano. Marin, 1913. I propose to Ansel Winthrop in a spontaneous rush of words, and only then do I notice that birds have fallen silent. The park holds its breath to see what will come of this boldness. Marin Forsyth is breaking the rules again, proposing to a man. But pigeons, knowing that unspoken rules only hold humanity back, say nothing. They only cock their heads as I lean against the tree beside my friend, awaiting his yes to be as quick and jolly as ever. AJ, have tea with me in the church bell tower. What time? AJ, let's sneak into the Roman forts after dark. I'll bring the lantern. AJ, there are tunnels under the park. Lead the way. It has been this way between us since we met, one astounding yes after another. Yet today the air is different, the park heavy with low-lying fog. A muscle jerks in his cheek, but his eyes remain closed. His silence means nothing. It only feels long because I've put so much stock in this. His yes will change everything, and it won't matter if the rest of my life continues eroding. And yet, refusing me really is the only wise thing to do. Is AJ wise? Not if he can help it. My proposal seemed perfectly fitting when I said it, resembling the casual flirtation of our first meeting. What was it? 3 weeks ago, here at this park? Only 3 weeks. I've eaten cheese older than that. This is a terrible idea, isn't it? That's why he's still lying back on the grass, hands behind his head, eyes closed. He is formulating his refusal. If only he'd hurry and spit it out so I might return to the business of being free. Free from family. Free from all financial entanglements. And as of this week, free from my position. But then I will have to face Cecil. Dear, precious Cecil. Even at 7, he's wiser than I am. I'll have to admit that he was right, too, and that I cannot take him along with me after all. My heart pounds hard. I cannot be his guardian. I can scarcely be guardian of myself. Unless AJ shocks me and agrees to my madcap scheme. Right now. I puff out of breath. Well? AJ peeps one eye open. What, no declaration of undying love? He quips. No self-respecting gent would accept without such shows of affection. I jiggle my foot, glancing about the park with an odd sense of being watched by someone. Shall I read you sonnets and kiss your fingertips? At least cling to my hand when you declare your love. He dangles it beside me. I duck away, my face burning hotly. For all that is holy, you needn't say yes, AJ. Just have done with it and refuse me. He sits up and seizes my hands, heedless of the ladies on the path behind us. Instantly I melt in the rich brown green of his gaze. You're serious, his brow knits. Marriage. I flash my cheekiest grin and shrug. Only if you agree. How stiff my shoulders are. Something flashes across his face like a magic lantern show. Suddenly the romance of the moment billows up until the rightness of this risk firms up in my heart. So I'm the safest harbor in sight, am I? You desire security now that you've lost your position. Security, yes, but also, he quoted Emily Barrett Browning at our first meeting, and he made me laugh even when I was angry, and even children love him, and his smile has magic in it, and it's AJ. Marriage to anyone would be a rescue right now, but marrying AJ would prove an Eden-like delight. He angles a critical gaze at me. Likely he thinks me shallow. Perhaps I am. But can I bring myself to declare my undying love for him? I've known the man little more than a fortnight. Yet I do know this. Ansel James Winthrop brings color and life to all he meets, myself included. I've never felt so instantly at ease with anyone before. Is that love? Perhaps a woman in reduced circumstances hasn't any business expecting love. Come now, AJ, I'm only hastening along what would have happened anyway. We've exchanged subtle flirtations for weeks now, and what is the point of all of that if not an eventual declaration? Surely he sees the sense in this. Love doesn't always require time. Only sincerity and a good dose of delight. Instead of answering, he flops back on the grass, hands behind his head, eyes closed against the bright sunlight. The cad. I open my mouth to take it back, to beg that he, instead of wedding me, take on a 7-year-old orphaned boy with an extra sensitive nature. But then AJ says, very well, with a jovial tone that might have ended with, why not? I accept your terms. I exhale, sagging against the tree. Well, that's grand. I'm overcome with such lovely calm, the like of which I've not felt since Lady St. Lauren's funeral. Nay, since that terrible middle-of-the-night hour I spent at the dear woman's deathbed, clutching her hand as her vibrant life slipped away. Those days were dreadful. But now, life is clarifying into one clear path, and all I have to do is walk it. With AJ. I slip my hand into his and cling to this man who has agreed to tie himself to me, which is quite brave of him, all things considered. He cracks one eye open to look at me, smiles, then closes it again, squeezing my hand. Another long, low exhale of contentment, which somehow calms my nerves. He's happy. This isn't the worst idea, just a hasty one. We'll have a quiet ceremony at the chapel as soon as possible. But Lady St. Laurent wished you to have a fine wedding at St. Peter's, and you should honor her wishes. She'd be most pleased. I sigh. Very well, I suppose you're right. Only afterward does the obvious strike me. Not with alarm, but with a faint hollow click of recognition. I hadn't ever mentioned to him the contents of my late employer's will. Not any of it. Not the wedding provision or the more generous portions. I let him lead me out of the park, still dazed by how neatly everything has fallen into place. All my careful scheming suddenly felt less like planning and more like stepping onto a path already laid out for me to follow.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammakerfiction.com.